Hello.
Oh, what's up, guys? I'm Sarah.
I'm Jordan.
Welcome to Coffee, Wine, and True Crime. So close.
You were going really, really fast from the beginning, so I didn't have the chance to jump in.
Oh.
So then I just popped in at the end there to give it a little emphasis.
Okay. You want to hear something interesting that I found on Murderpedia? So, you know how you can filter by states? So I was filtering by the states for women murderers, and there's no women murderers that killed across state lines, according to them.
I don't believe that.
I don't know, where it said several states, it was zero.
Well, but, there are women who are drug lords, and that's all in the United States. That's all across state lines. Those crimes are...
I mean, this is convicted.
True.
So I just thought that was interesting.
What are you drinking?
Oh, water. I'm really dehydrated.
Oh.
You're drinking water, too.
Yep. White Claw Mango water. Same difference.
So, I guess some business of stuff. I'm going to be on a podcast called Conversations with Ex Nelio. I think that comes out either this Friday or next Friday. He interviewed me, so if you want to listen to that, get to learn a little more about me, I guess. So check him out. We had a really good conversation.
It's very exciting.
Yes.
About me?
We talked about you a little bit, how we met and how we got into podcasting and stuff like that.
Cool.
I said we met in geometry class in ninth grade. I think that's true.
We did. Yep. Geometry class, ninth grade. I didn't have anyone to sit with at lunch. And, oh my god, it's so depressing. And you sat with me in the library, and we bonded.
It's because I didn't have anyone to sit with either.
Bonded in our loneliness, man.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
I know. And then I'm thinking we're going to start trying to set up a Patreon. I need to figure out my life a little more before I get that, considering it sounds like I'll be working soon. And then,
ooh.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And then I'm going to be moving, so it's all this stuff kind of happening really fast.
Is that official?
That I'm moving?
Mm-hmm.
If I get the job, I'm moving, so I can afford to.
Okay, true. You can cut that out. That was me just asking.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, we're looking into Patreon. We're not going to make it expensive at all. Just for $2.
Yeah, just for, the more content.
Yeah, more content. And then
the ability to get to get to know us better.
Yeah. And then with your donation, we're putting all the money kind of away, and once we have the money, we're going to be able to actually afford nicer equipment, because right now we're both using earbud mics and stuff, so we could actually afford some good podcasting stuff.
That's, you're a real podcaster when you have the microphone that has the spit guard. That's easily $500 in total.
Or how our headphones won't be connected with our mic. It's all Bluetooth enabled and stuff like that.
But good quality Bluetooth.
Yeah, really good. So any money that gets put into our pocket through Patreon will eventually come back and make your podcast listening experience better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's not a take.
Yeah, we're not pocketing the money. We're using it for the podcast. Should we get into it?
Mm-hmm. I think we should.
So my case this week's from Minnesota, eh?
That doesn't sound Minnesotan.
Oh. I do that to my friends who are from Minnesota.
Kind of sounded Canadian.
Oh.
Eh.
Oop. Let me school by ya.
That sounded like it. Minnesota. Yep.
Minnesota. All right. So my case this week's serial killer, Billy Ray Glaze. On July 27th, 1986, three transients found the body of 19-year-old Native American woman Kathleen Bowman, and she was found under a tree on 10th and Holden in Minneapolis. So when she was found, she was laying on her back with a pair of black pants lying over her right arm. Two tennis shoes were nearby, and she had blood-stained underwear, like, under her body.
Okay.
A 3-foot-long metal pipe was laying across her throat, and a stick was inserted into her vagina, and it was so far up, it broke her vaginal wall. She was also badly beaten with lacerations on her face, neck, and abdomen, and had a bunch of teeth broken.
Oh, my God.
So the autopsy determined that she died from a lack of oxygen to the brain due to pressure on her neck. The case went cold. So 8 months later, on April 12th, 1987, a man named George Big Bear found the body of 26-year-old Native American woman, Angela Whitebird Sweet, behind the American Indian Center on Franklin and Bloomington Avenues in Minneapolis. So she was totally naked besides a red bandana around her neck, and she was covered in blood. There's also a stick coming out of her vagina. So a shoe print was visible in the blood, like on her chest, and she was severely beaten. Her cause of death was lack of oxygen.
Like, how much rage does a person have to have, and how much darkness, you know?
Yeah.
It's really sad.
To beat someone to death and then stick a stick up their vagina.
Yeah, that's just next level disgusting.
Yeah. So a week and a half later, the body of 21-year-old Native American woman Angela Green was found under the Park Avenue Railroad Bridge in Minneapolis. She was also naked. Back of her head was crushed, and a piece of bamboo was sticking out of her vagina. She was severely beaten like the others, but her cause of death was a traumatic head injury. So all three of the women were young moms, commonly out alone, and they would frequented the bars, and like a large part of the Native American community, they suffered alcoholism.
Okay. Were they on like a reservation?
I don't think so. One of them, I believe, just was from South Dakota and just moved to Minneapolis, and then I think one was from Wisconsin.
Okay. So I just know that, like, around reservations, there's also a lot higher of a risk for Indigenous women to go missing.
Yeah.
So, sorry, continue.
Yeah. After the murder of Angela Green, the police figured out that there was, like, a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And the Minneapolis Police Department formed a task force, and they had no leads until a few weeks later on May 4th, 1987. Ray Flug, who was a waitress at the Bandbox Cafe in Minneapolis, said that a regular named Jesse Coulter could have done it. And after doing some investigating, the police found out that his real name was Billy Richard Glaze.
What was this lady's name again?
Ray Flug.
Flug?
Yes.
Interesting. Keep going.
Police tracked down Lewis Morrison, his girlfriend, and she said that Glaze left Minnesota after the murder of Green and moved down to New Mexico. So a little more on Glaze. He was 44 at the time of the murders. He had a long criminal history, including a conviction of rape, drunk driving, social security fraud, and disorderly conduct and counterfeiting. He is also known to have a fascination about Native Americans, and he claimed he was one, which he wasn't, and he went by the name Jesse Sitting Cow.
Is he white?
Yes.
That's so offensive.
I know.
Just to be like, hi, I'm now, like, Jordan sits on my bed. Like, that's so offensive. Just, like, pull something out of your ass.
Yeah, exactly.
And just, like, be so disrespectful to an entire culture of people.
Exactly. So, during his trial, many witnesses said that he made derogatory statements toward Native Americans, especially women, and said that he had a desire to sexually assault them.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So, he was arrested on May 24th, 1987 for a traffic offense down in New Mexico, and he was returned to Minnesota, where he voluntarily submitted hair, blood, and saliva samples to authorities, and he was arrested and charged with 3 counts of premeditated murder in the first degree and 3 counts of first-degree murder during a sexual assault.
Good.
And he was held on a $2 million bond, and he did not bond out.
Good.
Yep. Yeah, because I mean, he was a transient. He didn't have like
really stable. Yeah, I wouldn't expect him to.
Yeah. So during his time being held in jail, Glaze reportedly told other inmates that he did it, but then he told the authorities that he didn't and he was innocent.
Okay.
So this during
the worst.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, so you actually did it and you're just trying to get the authorities to believe you didn't do it. Or you're saying you didn't do it and you're telling inmates you did it to try to get cred.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
No.
You can't flip-flop.
So during his trial, multiple witnesses said that Glaze was acquainted with the victims, and a man named Leroy Hamblin testified that he saw Bowman's murder and Glaze was the killer. However, a majority of these witnesses were transients and criminals, so they weren't really credible, despite witness testimony isn't that credible in the first place. So they weren't credible really at all. So there wasn't much physical evidence, and since the victims were sexually assaulted, there was DNA, but however, at the time they could only do blood DNA. Because there was semen, but they couldn't test it.
Okay.
So the blood at one of the scenes did not match Glaze or the victim. So in like what evidence there was to convict him, they took a ring, a note, and a book from him, and then the shoe print that was on Angeline's body. So Lewis Morrison, who I said before was his girlfriend, said that Glaze gave him a pearl ring that was similar to what Angela Green's looked like. And for the shoe print that was found on Angeline, the police said it belonged to a shoe that Glaze reportedly had, but they couldn't find the shoes in his possession.
Okay. So still his.
I guess so. After a 35 and a half hours of jury deliberation, the jury on February 11th, 1988, found him guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder and 3 counts of second-degree murder. And he was sentenced to three consecutive life sentences with the possibility of parole after 52 years. And I thought it was weird that he served in Delaware.
Probably because of publicity. Like, people would go after him, right?
I don't know. Like, I couldn't find why they moved into Delaware. But so he served the 2 years up until 1990, I think, in Minnesota, and then they moved him to Delaware. So he continued to proclaim his innocence. In the mid-2000s, the Minnesota Innocence Project took on his case and tested some of the DNA that they couldn't test at the time, and reviewed some other evidence, but the new DNA evidence that showed that none of the DNA at the scene at all or the semen found in the victims matched Glaze.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So the DNA matched with another man at 2 out of the 3 scenes, and he was a convicted rapist.
Oh.
Dang. So the Innocence Project filed a petition for a new trial in 2014. So while the petition was still open with the state of Minnesota, Glaze died in prison on December 22nd, 2015. The Hennepin County District Court ruled since Glaze died, his appeal died with him, and he died a guilty man.
I mean, he was still, like, super racist and creepy and predatory.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily, like, yeah, do I feel kind of bad for immediately thinking he was guilty? Sure. But that doesn't mean that he was a good person by any means.
No, but also, I mean, after the DNA came out that none of the DNA matched him and it matched someone else, that, you know, that's pretty good evidence that he wasn't guilty.
Yeah.
And if he didn't do it, the guys who's, they won't try the guy who did it because they already said Green or Glaze did the murder.
Yeah.
So my sources were Hennepin County or HennepinAttorney.org, Wikipedia, AP, JusticeForNativeWomen.com, Justia, Murderpedia, NPR News, and the Star Tribune.
I think too with this case, it's like seeing a conviction for something like this, for a crime like against an Indigenous woman like that. Like that, I think that's kind of where I jumped the gun. Just because it's, like, you don't ever see that. So when you do see a conviction and, like, you think justice is served, you're like, yes, this is good. This is what we need more of.
Yeah, especially, Yeah, within the Native American community.
There's so many unsolved cases.
There's so many unsolved, in the, you know, and a lot of them are in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're extremely underrepresented mm-hmm. within the community, and people just kind of write them off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so when I saw him on Murderpedia and, like, read about it, I was like, oh, it'd, like, be kind of cool to do a case that involved Native Americans, since mm-hmm. I think they don't, their cases don't get publicized.
No, not nearly enough.
So, yeah, that's it.
Very cool. So, mine for this week, I originally was, Sarah already knows this, but for people listening, I was originally going to do Vermont, and then in the process
of researching, I gave her a random state to do.
Yep. And in the process, there wasn't that anything that interesting. There was Israel Keyes, but everyone, I feel like so many people know about him. I wanted to do something like not as well known.
I feel like that's the whole purpose of our podcast, to do smaller cases.
Exactly. So I was looking and I just saw the name, the Bender family. And I was like, and like, as in they were the perpetrators. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do this. Like, that name is just super kind of iconic. Yeah. Excuse me. Okay, so this is from Kansas. And there's not a ton of information because this is from like the 1870s. So really long time ago. and it's like unsolved kind of.
Okay.
So the Bender family lived and worked in LeBec County, Kansas in around 1871 to 1872.
Oh, I've heard this.
There was the, can we have a case where you don't know for once?
I mean, we can. I'll just have to give you the case each week.
Yeah, right. Okay, so there was John Bender, his wife, Elvira Bender, their son, John Jr. Bender, and their daughter, Kate. And apparently, it was rumored that the two children were claimed to be married through common law marriage. So that's how long ago it is. So in around that time, there were like these five families that made up this town. So there were literally like 75 people in this entire town.
That sounds about right.
And people like, and it was a really small town, and everyone obviously like knew each other, and this family was known for being like kind of weird. Like, there is nothing good that I've heard about mm-hmm. John Bender Sr. It all it says is that like his speech, his English was so poor that like you couldn't really hear.
They were German, right?
Supposedly. Okay. So we'll get into that. So he like kind of sounded grunty all the time because he spoke such little English and had such a heavy accent.
Mm-hmm.
And then his wife spoke little English and people literally called her a she devil. Like, they said she was so mean to people.
Yeah.
And then the son was actually like well liked. He was young. He was described as being handsome, spoke English with a German accent. But people kind of thought he was like a little bit crazy or like not really there, which nowadays there's was probably a reasonable reason as to why. But back then it got written off as like, oh, you're just kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then the daughter was kind of like the only, quote, normal one of the family. She was young, attractive, had really good English, and was a healer and a psychic. So she was really popular and people would come all over to like see her and get psychic mm-hmm. readings and stuff from her. So then she and the family owned this like inn. So she attracted people to stay at the inn as they passed through the town. So they're believed to be German, but there's no actual proof of that. There were no documents. So some people think they might've been from the Netherlands. Okay. And there's been no like solid proof of their names. Like, it's said that like John Bender has also been known to go by William Bender. So it's, and then that also is just due to dating and this becoming like an actual case to more of like a myth over okay. time. So in getting into the crimes, in May 1871, the body of a man named Jones, who had his skull crushed and throat cut, was found in the Drum Creek, and the owner of the creek was suspected, but there was nothing, no further action besides that was taken. And then in early 1872, the bodies of two men were found with similar injuries. And then by 1873, more people started to go missing on this kind of trail. So people just thought, oh, like, that's a weird road. Like, don't go down it. Stuff happens. Mm-hmm. And it was known for horse thieves and villains. And there were vigilantes that would come and try to, like, arrest people after these disappearances. But many of them were actually just innocent and were under suspicion. So then in the winter of around 1872, George Newton Longer and his infant daughter Mary Ann left Kansas to resettle in Iowa, and they were never seen again.
Okay.
And then in 1873, his former neighbor, Dr. William Henry York, went looking for him and questioned people like along the trail. And then he reached Fort Scott, which is in Bourbon County, Kansas, which I believe is in the bordering, is like the bordering county, or in the same like general area. Fort Scott is modern day Bourbon County. So obviously back then it was probably different. But then he never came home, and he had two brothers, Colonel Ed York and Alexander M. York, who was a member of the Kansas State Senate. So now they had like big names involved in this. So they went down and looked for him. And then they questioned everybody that they could all along the trail. And then finally came to the Bender's Inn, where they said, yeah, he'd stayed with us, but he left. So he probably just got into some trouble with some Native Americans and just kind of wrote it off as that. And then like asked him to stay for dinner at the inn. And then he stayed for dinner. And then a little bit he left, and then came back later to keep searching. And he had armed men with him. And he came back because he was told that a woman fled the inn after being threatened with knives by the wife. And apparently she spoke a lot more English than she let on.
Okay.
And at one point, she told the woman that she was a witch who had cursed her coffee and ordered the men to leave her house. And they were like, you know a lot better English than you let on.
Yeah, I mean, you formed a whole sentence with... You know?
Yeah, exactly. So Kate, like, kind of was the one who kept getting these people to come back because she was so charismatic.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe people came back.
I know. And, well, it was these guys trying to look for, like, their brother.
Right.
So that makes sense. But, like, also the fact that she was like, oh, I'll use my powers to help you find him. Like, come stay with us. So then at that point, they were definitely suspicious of the family and their neighbors. Mm-hmm. But they had to find evidence. So then over time, like, the other towns or like neighboring communities were starting to be suspicious and were like, these people keep disappearing. This is really sketchy. And they had a town hall meeting with the guy searching for his brother, the two men of the Medair household. And then after talking to all these people, they decided that they were going to have a search warrant be issued for every house along that trail.
Okay.
And then by the time they went to visit and like go about the search warrant, they realized that the family had fled.
Of course they have.
Yeah. So then they searched the house after the family had fled. And I guess because it was a cabin and it was in the 1870s, it says that they were able to like pick up the whole house and move it to the side to be able to dig underneath.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. They do that with houses today. They just like move houses.
Yeah. But we have the technology now.
Yeah.
So then they did that, and they found a trap door with like blood and stuff underneath, but no bodies. And then they went around the property with a metal rod and searched. And then they found Dr. York. So who the guy that all these, like the Senate, they were all looking for. They found him with his face down and his feet barely below the surface. And then they found 9 other people on the property. Yeah. Seven of the 9 suspected graves. One was found in a well, and then there were also body parts found, and all of them had their heads bashed with a hammer and their throats were cut.
Okay.
There was also the body of a young girl found, but she had no injuries, like significant traumatic injuries, so they figured it was strangulation or that she was buried alive.
Okay.
So then through like looking at all the victims and analyzing the kind of like the house and the crime scene, they figured out that what the family would do is that like Kate would bring these people in and like get them in from being like, oh, I'll help you with my like clairvoyantness. They'd have them sit at the head of the table at dinner and be like, oh, you're our guest of honor, here, sit here. And there was a trap door underneath that would so they would come up like the son and the dad would be like behind them, come up behind him, hit him with in the head with a hammer, and then one of the girls would like slit their throat and they would open the trap door and they would fall down.
Crazy.
And then they would like bury them. Yeah, so they escaped. And technically, to all accounts, they were never found again. Like, not really.
It's like where, like, people say they have sightings.
Mm-hmm, or people say, like, they've killed them, but no one's claimed the reward. And now it's at $64,025 as of 2020. That's what the value would be today of that reward.
We gotta get on this.
I know, right? Let's go to Kansas. And there's people who've claimed to be, like, Kate and the mother and all this other stuff throughout the years, but nothing super substantial enough to really get the reward claimed and
figure out what happened with them.
Yeah. And there's been people who've been, like, arrested over the years who've claimed to be, like, the mother and daughter and all this other stuff. But I think that the one person who went to court, yeah. Yeah, there were two women, the woman who claimed to be the mother and daughter were like brought to court over it. But everyone was like, no, I don't think so. So the charges were weak and no one really believes that.
Okay.
So in total, they had about like 20 victims, give or take, possibly.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And through like investigating the people, a lot of them, some of them were rich, but a lot of them were not.
From what I heard, they like really didn't steal that much money off people.
No, it was at the end of the day. Relevant.
Yeah.
Like it was a family bonding thing. And then they all just dipped. And no one ever heard from them again. Which is kind of crazy.
You know what I don't do for family bonding?
Kill people with your parents and brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that would be my particularly fun family evening at home.
No, but that's just crazy that they were all like psychopaths to like kill.
Yeah, and the fact that like the poor neighbors were thought of to be guilty and they probably had no clue and were just like, I don't know, like these people are neighbors, they're weird, it's not us, it's them.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
And the fact that they're called the Bender family. People call them the Bloody Benders, which honestly sounds like a frat house party name, but also creepy.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
That was my case. Kind of short, not too much info.
There can't be. It's so far long ago and they never found them.
Yeah. So big thanks to Real Unexplained Mysteries, Wikipedia, Murderpedia, and Insider.
Okay. Have you watched the new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix?
Yes.
It's so good.
Of course I have.
Yeah, I watched it like the day or two after it came out.
Mm-hmm. It was really good.
And I want to watch the documentary on HBO series about the Golden State Killer.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
We don't freaking get HBO here.
True.
Me neither. And my mom, I was like, hey, can we get HBO so I can like watch this series? And she's like, no.
Just do the free trial for a month and binge it. That's what I did with Game of Thrones.
Well, I think it's 8 episodes. I think it's longer than a month. But I can wait till, like, a bunch come out and then, like, I can just wait. I can just see how my grandma has HBO and I'll just use hers.
True. I think you can also get HBO with Hulu if you have Hulu.
So I do have Hulu, yeah. Like,
get the discount from that.
I'm trying not to spend money.
True.
But I'm going to watch it. I'm going to figure out a way to watch it. I might just use my grandma's account.
Cool. So yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna, I don't have plans next weekend, so we're gonna film next weekend.
Yes. And then I do go on vacation in early August.
That's fine. I'll probably be moving. Hopefully.
So, yeah, but that's not. But next weekend we are good.
Yes. And then we'll take a week break. I'll probably come out with another bonus episode since Jordan's away. But yeah, so we're gonna, you know, if we don't get an episode out, like with the two of us, I'll probably just record a bonus.
And I can also just like find something and record like on my phone, or like when the downtime that I have, when like we can't be together, and I can send it to you, and then that can be like my bonus episode.
Yeah.
Too. So yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at CWATC Podcast, Instagram, Coffee, Wine, and True Crime Podcast. Send us an email at coffeewineandtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. Check us out. We got followed by the TV channel on Twitter today, HLN, the TV channel that plays all of Forensic Files. The new Forensic Files. They follow us on Twitter now, and I got really excited because I love that channel.
It's super cool.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. We're one of 400 people they follow.
Yeah, right? We're special.
And they have over, like, 25,000 followers, if so.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I was like, wow, that's really cool. So, we're making waves on social media, apparently.
We're getting there.
Oh, I start a poll. I can keep posting dog photos of my dogs on social if you want to keep seeing them.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay, I'll have to vote for yes.
From me.
From Jordan. We could post some pictures of Obi, Jordan's mom's dog.
Yes, the best. And Tucker.
Yeah, so we'll just start posting more photos of our animals too. Because why not? We love them. So yeah, we're making waves on social media. So make sure to check us out there. That's where we post a lot of stuff. So yeah. All right. Well, bye.
Bye.
Obsessed with UFOs and extraterrestrials?
Convinced there's a chupacabra in your backyard?
Is your doppelganger ruining your life?
Do you love all things haunting related?
If you answered yes to any,
or none of these,
then these are the mostly sensical, slightly drunken ramblings for you? ? I'm Emily.
And I'm Joel, and we're the hosts of Drink Drunk Dead. Join us,
our two cats, Emma and Otto, and our house ghost,
every week as we have a few drinks, discuss all things paranormal,
and raise a toast to our ghosts.
Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Hey, Foilheads, this is Ash.
This is Kenzie.
This is Cole, and this is Dapper and the Dames.
A conspiracy theory podcast where we take you down the rabbit hole to discuss the theories that make you wonder what's really going on.
From lighthearted to heavy, we're bringing it all. Check us out on Instagram at DapperandTheDames_podcast, Facebook at Dapper and the Dames, or our email, DapperandTheDamesPodcast@gmail.com.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
Hello, everyone. I'm John, host of the new podcast, Hot Takes and Beer Breaks, where I'm joined by two of my best friends, Justin and Jason, to give our hottest takes on current events, entertainment, movies, and sports, all while going on wild tangents, making cheesy puns, and having a good laugh. Listen to us wherever you get your podcast and find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Hot Takes and Beer Breaks, where we have some hot takes, but more beer breaks.
The world is a confusing, stressful, and often frightening place.
And we each have our own unique coping mechanisms that help us get by.
Some people will tell you that when life gives you lemons, you should make lemonade.
No, that's terrible advice. Just randomly getting free fruit is extremely suspicious. Haven't you heard of Snow White?
That's actually a really good point. It's usually not a great idea to consume anything if you're not totally sure what's in it.
If you're the type of person who copes with discomfort by making strange jokes and who enjoys losing yourself in a creepy and sometimes bloody mystery,
please join us for our dark comedy podcast, Studying Scarlet.
We alternate weekly between true crime and fictional crime, and we even take listener requests for episode topics.
So if you too have a morbid sense of humor, we'd love to welcome you into our weird, quirky, and sometimes disturbing world.
Studying Scarlet is available on your favorite podcast app, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
We can't wait to meet you.
Please subscribe today.
Welcome to Cold Brew, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Brewer, and I'm inviting you to grab your coffee and join me every other Monday as I share these stories with you case by case. From an unsolved small-town triple homicide to an axe-murdering wife, and even an unidentified serial killer that is still out there and could possibly live in my neighborhood. We'll cover facts, theories, conspiracies, and even false media nonsense. You can listen to Cold Brew now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow me on social media at Cold Brew Crime to learn more. See you soon.